So welcome to the Confused Breakfast Podcast. On this podcast, we review the movies that define the 80s, 90s, and 2000s for us as kids. But you really can't talk about the defining media of your formative years without talking about the rest of pop culture. On our MIDI episodes, affectionately known as Mini Bites, we dive into some other aspects of childhood that must be explored. On today's fun-sized conversation, we discuss one of the most popular game shows of all time, The Price is Right. Oh, man. Before we get started, it's review time. This one comes from Quincy Mullen, longtime listener, first time reviewer.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey.
A super duper funny podcast about classic movies. They provide cool tidbits of info about each movie while tossing in their own hilarious opinions and theories. A fun listen for my commute. Sean, AJ, and Mike are very entertaining. Going to be number one in no time.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Quincy.
Right?
Wow.
Quincy's provided a lot of like beer for our other podcast. I'm super stoked as well.
And look at this.
She's been so kind to us over the years. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, very much.
So what you're trying to say is Quincy is the number one coolest person in the world.
I think she probably might be like the number one person for our podcast.
Number one person.
Yeah.
Quincy,
I think that's fair.
Number one person.
Yep. There you go.
Well, cool.
You guys got to step it up.
Yep. I'm just saying, we're getting so many reviews coming in that we're going to go to reading these every week. But listen to me. I am serious. That doesn't mean that you don't have to write a review because we have so many coming in.
Exactly.
We still need them, you guys.
Super important.
If you haven't done it, leave us a review. And I actually got to thinking, you might have accidentally left us that one-star review.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it potentially could have been you on accident. Go in there in your Apple podcast and see if you accidentally gave us a one-star.
Yeah.
If you did, switch that to a five and write, hey, guys, I'm a big dummy. Sorry about that. I love your podcast. And then we'll read it.
And then if you meant to do that, just switch it to one and a half and then switch it back to one.
Totally.
And then we'll know.
And then we'll know for sure.
We'll really know. But then say some words about it. Because then it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
if you
don't. Then it doesn't mean anything, you dummies. Well, let me ask you this about The Price is Right. The reason we felt we had to do this is because, yes, it is one of the most popular game shows of all time.
So good.
Yeah.
But there's that iconic. I want to know if I'm. And sometimes I feel like I have thoughts and theories that everyone shares, and then I'm fine that I'm the only one that thinks that.
Don't worry, everyone shares this one that you're about to say. If I'm pretty positive.
Okay. I hope this is where I'm going here. The reason The Price is Right is so special. Is because when you were sick from school.
Yes.
that was like the best part. If you were sick, like it sucked, you were sick from school, but being home by yourself and watching The Price is Right from 10 to 11 was the best part of the
sickness. This show is synonymous with me watching this show on my weird floral like felt couch that my mom had with a pink huge bowl filled with puke. Filled with just vomit,
but still smiling.
I can't not like watch Price is Right with Bob Barker. I will say
yes,
without thinking of the smell of puke. And it's not because of the show. It's just because it's just what it is for me. Right.
I'm just hoping that I was really hoping that was everybody's. Because when else would you watch Price is Right? You would never watch it unless you stayed at
school. You were always at school. And like when it was on. But yeah, like it is. It's synonymous with the idea of I have strep throat again. I'm staying home again. I've got freaking like I got the Ludens and the Halls and all this stuff. And my mom said she's going to bring me McDonald's and lunch. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And you're just like. God, now I don't want to watch stupid Nick Jr. you're coming through.
I'm kind of grown out of Blue's Clues a little bit.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to watch Face and freaking, you know, all that stuff. You're just like trying to thumb through. And like, I swear to God, it was always like the stories, the soaps and stuff. And then,
because afternoon television was not great.
No. And it was like, it was junk. And especially when The Price is Right ended, it always went to like Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, it was a dark period.
The Showcase Showdown, when that was over, it was a sad time.
It was a dark, like 3 to 4 hours until it was 6 o'clock.
Yeah. It was dark from the moment he told me to get my pet spayed or neutered. And then I was like, ugh.
Gave you something to think about.
I know. I was like, is my dog spayed?
I don't know.
I don't know what that is. So, okay. I'm too young.
Well, if you're listening to this episode, we know you're thinking the same thing as us, and that's probably why you want to tune in. You want to hear us reminisce about this amazing show. So first, we're going to start you off with a little history. There's some things that I don't think many people know, but The Price is Right stands as the longest running game show in U.S. history.
Wow.
Yeah. Price is Right. Do you know what year it was started? Out there in podcast land, just throw a year out. What year was Price is Right started? And go. What do you guys think?
1958.
Yes.
Had I not read this, I would have said like 80s. Probably, yeah. But 1956 is when the show started.
That was close.
1956 is when it started, and it broadcast until 1965. It was essentially just the bidding section of the game show, mm-hmm. You know, where there's the four contestants, and they all make a bid on how much the thing cost. It was essentially that for the entire show. Whoever won got to return for the following week. So, yeah, and it was shown weekly. That version had the distinction of being the first TV game show to be broadcast in color, actually.
Oh, wow.
After being a top 10 primetime show for some time, its ratings gradually but noticeably declined, and in 1965, it was canceled. In 1972, it was brought back and revamped into the version that we all know today, where they do the bidding portion first, just like the original game show, then they move on to the pricing games and the final showcase showdown.
I do kind of want to throw in, before you move on, like when color came about, I don't remember because I wasn't even a fucking thought in my dad's ball sack yet. But
wow,
fair enough.
You can tell like the distinction between black and white and color, like especially in TV, because it's just like black and white and then fucking every single fucking color you can imagine and every single fucking weird kind of
prismatic graphic coloring of craziness.
Everything's
yeah.
kind of groovy, you know, everything. It's just like really fucking poppy.
I'm pretty sure most colors were just multiple colors, just like changing constantly.
I think it was like a specific to a T kind of pink that maybe someone would suggest for a t-shirt.
Yeah, there you go. And they're like, put it in there. Let's do it. Well, no, and so it was initially actually only a 30-minute episode when it first started in 1972. And then in 1975, it changed to the hour-long format, which we all know and enjoy.
Really? It was an hour
it
was, long?
It turned to an hour back in 1975, and that's what it's remained since. It's been an hour. It's been an hour since.
Well, you know, you've got all the Bengay and Metamucil commercials
that are
peppered in. So it's probably 40 minutes, but yeah, 42 minutes.
Oh, you bastard.
Just say it.
That's what we're looking at in 20 years, man.
Metamucil. So, and that is actually also when the wheel came into play that they started spinning. And it had been going 5 days a week during the week ever since. Except for the 30th anniversary special, which was taped at Harrah's in Las Vegas, The Price is Right has been taped at Studio 33 in CBS Television City in Los Angeles for the entire run. They are now over 9,000 episodes of that show.
Wow. Can one of you like run me and the audience down of like a episode in general? Like what happens like the Price is Right that we know and love today? What happens? What's the step-by-step kind of thing?
So the first is the bidding wars,
okay. Right.
where there are four contestants that get to bid on one particular product. Whoever comes the closest without going over gets to get up on stage and do one of the pricing games.
Okay. Right.
And there are three of those. So they'll have one person do a pricing game, then they'll go back to a bidding war, then another person bidding war, then another person, to where there were three prize game players. Then those three prize game players spin the wheel. And whoever has the highest dollar amount on the wheel moves on to the showcase showdown. Then they start that whole thing over again.
Rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat it so that they end up with two showcase showdown winners.
Got you. Okay.
And that is when they bid on the best prizes.
Yeah. The big boys.
That's kind of how I remember it, too. I was just like, I literally haven't seen the show. I didn't get a chance to rewatch any episodes.
Well, there's 9,000.
Yeah, you can find one, I bet.
One.
Eventually.
Maybe one.
At some point, you can find one.
Maybe like on YouTube, just like driving to the pharmacy, you could probably stumble upon an episode
maybe.
Somehow.
You might be able to.
The pharmacy, huh? Yeah.
Well, you know.
No specific.
Well, Sean, I know you did a little research on your own. You can't talk about The Price is Right without talking about the hosts.
It's all about the hosts, man.
And interestingly enough, there's been more than just Bob Barker for anybody out there. There have been different hosts.
Whatever.
You guys might know about Drew Carey, but you might not know about Bill Cullen.
Bill Cullen.
Bill Cullen.
Oh, sorry.
Bill Cullen.
He hasn't had issues with his colon yet.
Clean bill of health of my colon. Okay.
Originally a radio and television personality whose career spanned 5 decades. His biggest claim to fame was being a game show host, hosting 23 shows, earning him the nickname Dean of Game Show Hosts. His first game show hosting duties were in the show Winner Takes All. I've seen that reference in like movies that I've watched here and there, but I've never like seen an episode or anything like that. After landing the gig for Price is Right, he hosted both daytime and syndicated versions of the show that ran for 9 seasons until it was canceled in 1965. Cullen was in the running to host the revamped 1972 version of the show, but the job was now too strenuous for Cullen, who had been struggling with polio actually for, I think I read that like, he had been diagnosed with polio like in the 1930s, so he had been struggling with it for a long, long time. Bill died at the age of 70. I wrote 70 million. just edit it out. Bill died at the age of 70 in 1990. And then it was Bob Barker's duty. After serving in World War II, Bob Barker moved to California to pursue a career in broadcasting because he, like in high school and everything like that, he had been like local college radios or college radios and stuff like that before he went to the service. Moved to California to pursue a career in broadcasting. He hosted his own radio program affectionately called Guess What? The Bob Barker Show, which ran for 6 years. Radio show, if you can imagine. Bob began his game show career hosting the show Truth or Consequences in 1956 and continued hosting duties until 1975. In 1972, for the new revamped version of The Price is Right, Bob Barker was a peak interest for hosting duties by CBS. Instead of short-term host Dennis James, it was kind of a complicated thing. Like Bob Barker did like the morning time.
Yeah, there was a morning and a nighttime.
Yeah, there was like a morning and then like a syndicated time. And then Dennis James was the host of that show. Bob offered to host a different show called The Joker's Wild, but CBS wanted him. And so on September 4th, 1972, Bob began hosting the now infamous show full-time, and they kind of got rid of Dennis James. On October 15th, 1987, Bob made the unprecedented decision at the time for hosts to go all natural, ditching the faded dark hair dye for that luxurious silver fox head of hair, which was already natural for him at the time. So it's kind of unprecedented for like a game show host or like any host, like I like Regis Philbin, to just like go natural gray. But Bob Barker was like, fuck it, dude, this is... I'm the silver fox.
That's who I am.
He's a pimp.
Yeah.
Bob would go on to win 19 Emmys and 5 daytime Emmys. 19.
That's a lot.
Out of a lifetime of broadcasting and hosting and everything like that. That's consecutive, you know. On Halloween of 2006, Bob made the announcement that he would retire from hosting duties on the beloved Price is Right. And in June 2007, he would tape his final episode of the show. After his retirement, Barker made 3 return appearances in The Price is Right. His first appearance on the episode aired on April 16, 2009 to promote his new autobiography, Priceless Memories. He appeared in the showcase round, and at the end of the show, Barker made another guest appearance on the show to celebrate his 90th birthday celebration, which aired on December 12th, 2013. He was announced as a contestant for the first time ever on the show, along with one showcase.
Barker, come on down.
Exactly, right? Can you imagine? It was a surprise appearance on April 1st, 2015 for an April Fool's Day kind of thing where Drew Carey was actually kind of, he was at a bout of pneumonia. And so they had Bob Barker kind of guest in for one episode as he was kind of ailing from just kind of old age. After that, Drew Carey, along with a stand-up career, acting career, and hosting career, Drew also had a similar past as Bob Barker, enlisting in the Marine Corps in 1980, serving for 6 years as a field radio operator. which is the job that my brother did in the Marines. And that's kind of like mostly frontline, kind of like getting cable from
communications.
Yeah, from one point to another. Kind of dangerous shit. Began his comedy career in 1985. He appeared on the Johnny Carson Show in 1991. Hey, what's up? And his performance was impressed Carson so much that he invited Drew to couch next to his desk, which was a rare honor.
That's a big deal for comedians, right?
I guess, yeah. It was like I would assume it's like a guest spot. Like
no. So from what I understand is after your comedy routine, if Johnny thought you were great, he would invite you over to end the show with him where you talked a little bit more.
Okay.
Like they kind of interviewed you.
I get
you. It was not guaranteed. Only the good comedians they all talk about that. Like I got to sit on Johnny's couch. Like yeah. Johnny asked me over on my debut thing. Like that's a big deal.
I mean, yeah, he will that. I mean, Drew Carey of all people, you know, that is another thing that we will touch on in these mini bites. I would assume is late night hosts one of these days.
Oh yeah.
Drew got his own show called affectionately the Drew Carey Show, kind of like the Bob Barker Show. Drew then took up his first hosting job as host of Whose Line Is It Anyway, which we all love.
Yep.
Ryan Stiles, you know, the
Ryan Mockery or Colin Mockery.
Colin Mockery. And,
Wayne Brady.
I mean, it'll probably be an episode.
It probably has to be.
In 2007, Drew did the pilot episode of a game show, Power of 10, which I've never heard of. CBS had seen the pilot and liked Drew. After the retirement of Bob Barker, CBS offered Drew the hosting duties of Price. He initially turned the job down, but announced on David Letterman he would be the next host of Price is Right. His first taping began on August 15, 2007, and the episodes would start airing October 15th of that same year. And I believe are still going today.
Yeah, they are. We're kind of going through the same thing with that. Like Bob Barker was such a pimp and such a beloved person.
Yeah.
I mean, like, first of all, what a lucky guy. Like, what a career.
Yeah.
But then, like, kind of like with Alex Trebek, right? Like, you can't just replace these people.
Right.
And that's what Drew said. He's like, when asked about it, he's like, there's no replacing Bob Barker whatsoever. I'm just going to do what I was hired to do, which is host a game show.
Yeah.
And
Drew now has completely stepped into that role and is equally beloved. Where, you know, like, we'll see if that happens on Jeopardy because,
sure,
my God, like, that's tough.
It's a big deal, man. Like, these shows are fucking absolutely our culture. It's in our blood. Like, Price is Right is just like we just said, all we can think about is just being sick at home from school and watching these shows. And, like, Jeopardy is just like, there's nothing without him. There's nothing without
Trebek. Had they made the wrong choice back in 2006-07, the show ends.
Yeah.
This show ends in a fiery crash.
Yep.
But, you know, they made the right choice. And I know, AJ, I know you were looking into, like, just some interesting tidbits and stuff for the show. So why don't you tell us about some of those?
Yes. There's a lot of fun, quirky facts. Like, a show like this doesn't just exist for this long without just, like, I mean, reaching into our lives like that, like as kids and stuff. But I think there's just a lot of fun facts of, and you guys have covered some of them already, honestly. But the process of getting chosen is kind of where I started with all this. And every single person that goes into that studio is, like, these lines start early in the day, and there are people who, like, committed to being on this show.
There's lines just be in the audience,
and part of that process is, like, there's one guy who actually makes the choice of who's going to be on this show or potentially on this show, and this guy walks the lines of every single time there's an airing. They air two shows, or they record two shows in a day, three times a week. And they're hour long episodes, and for every single person that wants to be on, this guy literally sees, it takes him about 2 hours. His name is Stan Blitz, and he walks through and he vets these people and has short conversations with these people and looks for energy and, like, trying to, like, he wants people to match his energy.
Yeah.
That he wants excitable people.
Wow.
And that's literally how he does it. He's looking for humor. He's looking for anything in these quick moments.
So breaking down the wall, contrary to prior belief, it's not a random picking.
You don't just go into this place.
They pick people on specific reasons.
Yep. Hey, what's up, Stan Blitz? What is your favorite serial killer?
Stan Blitz. Night Stalker.
Good call. You're on the show.
Hey. And that's literally like what they did. So, yeah, one guy ever since 1979.
Talk about
chosen,
a job, dude.
Yeah. Did you guys know the game Plinko?
Mm-hmm. Duh.
There's only 10 Plinko chips in existence. In the
what?
World. Seriously.
In the world?
In the world.
And people are looking for these like Dragon Balls,
basically. I think if you do collect them all, you get to make a wish to change the world.
That's arguably the most popular game.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Plinko. I mean, yep.
I think so. Yeah. I always waited for Plinko.
Yep.
But there was a point where it felt like it dropped off for a while.
Oh, I think they realize if it's one of the more popular games, they're not going to do it every episode.
Yeah.
They want you to keep watching, right?
Oh, yeah. Man, that's a good call. Yeah.
So a funny thing is, speaking to that, when Drew Carey actually started, they actually made the games easier in his initial episodes.
Hmm.
So that way it was like a more positive experience.
Sure.
So that way, like, people didn't think,
oh, this Drew guy's pretty cool.
Oh, he's giving away money. Yeah, you know, he also has given away over $200,000 from his pocket, where if you guess like the right price on the bidding place, he gives that individual $500.
Yep.
He's given away $200,000 since he started doing this.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Drew.
One of the big things is, have you guys ever heard about like I actually knew a friend. He was from high school. He actually went on. He won a Showcase Showdown.
What?
Yeah, from my high school.
Really?
Yeah. He went on, I think he won like some dirt bikes or jet skis or something. He won a trip, like, and there was something else.
A camper.
He's probably something really, stuff like or that. Like a washer dryer set, you know,
a can of Campbell's soup.
Yeah. Yeah.
An entire Tupperware set.
Right. So
charcoal grill.
It's a new charcoal grill. Wow. Thanks, Rod Roddy. Tell us what we want.
This is not fucking space shoes or
moon shoes. Hell of a lot better. So have you guys ever heard about like there's like some controversy when you actually win on this show, like winning the showcase, but even winning like your standard winnings. One person said, I feel like this is dramatic, but you basically sign your life away to collect your prizes. A little dramatic, but they said, only if you're able to pay the taxes on everything you've won. So if you have like, you know, car, dirt bikes,
guess the worst part
and
of everything.
A trip, right? Yeah, you have to pay Uncle Sam's part. So think about that. If you get what, like $21,000 in your Showcase Showdown plus your other prizes.
Oh no, then you have to immediately
come up with, I don't know what's 7%, 8%,
whatever
it is out there. You have to pay all that. So it's like, you know, you have to pay, you have to come up with like $2,500 in tax to pay them.
Man.
So you can claim your prizes.
So I'm assuming, much like we broke down in Legends of the Hidden Temple, that a lot of people probably go, oh, I can't do that. And then they go, okay, you don't win a prize then.
So this lady literally said she in her first game, she won $1,200 in Plinko. It just got absorbed by the $2,500 in tax she had to pay anyways.
What the fuck, man?
I don't like this anymore.
I know. This is not fun.
Why are we breaking these down?
Pulling the curtains and peeling it back. Okay.
No, and to stay on that too, I also kind of read that like the non-car prizes, they had to like, you couldn't even take it home with you. Like they mailed it to
you. You don't take them with you right away.
And cars, it's not like you, I pictured you got in that car and you drove.
Drive away right off set.
No, you do not. You had to go to like your local dealership and they had to arrange that.
So you had to go through the bullshit of buying a fucking car. The nightmare that is.
I don't want it anymore.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So you're saying you won this off a game show?
I don't understand.
You realize I can't legally believe you, right?
Okay. I don't have any inclination to believe that
I'm
you're telling me.
I'm gonna need
truth.
A signature from Bob Barker himself.
Last few fun things, and we'll lead up to obviously the biggest one ever. But Come On Down, that was a statement in case you still want to come on down to claim your fucking prizes. That was not something iconic. That was actually that is an iconic saying right now like for pop culture. Come on down.
Everybody knows it.
That was started by the announcer, the boisterous announcer, Johnny Olsen, in the 70s. And then went on to Rod Roddy, who that was my announcer. You know,
Rod Roddy and fucking Stan Blitz,
Tina Montgomery, come on now.
Didn't Rod always have really crazy weird suits on, like red colored suits?
He got them from Thailand.
Oh, okay,
he did it specifically to keep up or outshine with Bob Barker because he didn't have as much screen time, obviously.
So he had to just
so
be
when
memorable.
He did, he was boisterous and over the top and wore these crazy suits that specifically silk suits from Thailand.
So he's being the Elton John.
Yeah.
Just like wearing crazy glasses and fucking like feathers all over the place. He's like, I have 2 minutes
That's it.
Total of screen time and got to absorb everything.
But got to.
That microphone, that silly freaking microphone. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
He holds it like 2 fingers.
You know what I'm talking about. That microphone is used for a very specific reason.
What?
It is actually because it is a less intimidating microphone to shove in somebody's face.
I like that.
When to somebody who's talking.
I'm tapping out. It's too easy.
You know, it's a lot longer and slender. It's a lot more appealing, you know.
Hey, all right.
Hey.
To wave in somebody's face rather than something that's, you know, big and thick and.
So rather than like,
tell me where you're from, and
kind of like cupping it,
actually
and sucking it, and
no, that's a really good point, you know, because like people always want to grab the microphone.
It's true.
You can't really grab.
Yeah, you get
it's like with 2 fingers
with your tippy.
It's very true. Yeah, the tippy fingers.
God dang it! I've got a few more here. Okay,
why don't people sing?
Let's work. Why don't they sing? So there's one person in the history of the show, 2008, guess the exact value of the showcase showdown.
Did
you guys hear about this? Have you been able to read on this?
No, I watched there's a documentary about it called Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much. Did you ever watch that?
I watched that.
Yeah,
yes.
It was amazing. It was all about this dude and the other guy.
Yeah, he... One of them was that person who, how many times did he try to get onto the show?
His name was Ted Slauson.
Yes.
And like Ted.
Typical.
Dude, Ted had like a total knack for numbers, right?
Yes.
Like, cause you were going to talk about Terry Neese or whatever.
Neese,
did you have much on Ted Slauson at all?
No, I don't have a lot on Ted, on him.
Dude. So Ted was just a total like numbers guy, right? He had crazy memory. Like he knew that he worked best with things with visual cues,
okay,
kind of a thing. So he bought a VCR and would like watch the shows. He would tape every episode, watch them over and over, and he would like take mental snapshots of things. And he realized they never changed the prices of things. They would reuse the same prices, and they would be the same prices.
So he. Just to break it down, he bought like...
He was a massive fan of the show.
Episodes.
He would record them on a VCR. So Ted was back in like late 80s, early 90s
when Ted
got into this.
Right.
And for 3 straight years, he knew everything about every prize and what price it was.
He had spreadsheets.
Yeah, and he had spreadsheets.
Crazy.
He had like flashcards, and he went to more than 20 tapings of the show, but never got chosen to be on the show until 1992. He actually was called on the show, and he did. He like guessed everything exactly right, like to get out of the bidding round, and then he guessed the prizes exactly right, but he did not win the wheel. Like somebody outspun him on the wheel, so he didn't get to go to the showcase.
Wow.
And he continued to show up. He came, they say he came like more than 38, 40 times over the rest of his time going there.
So you're saying like this is an individual. This is an individual who straight up just like kind of what's his name? Something Payne in
Ted
Slauson.
Oh, Howard Payne.
Howard Payne and Speed. He just kind of like obsessed over this
completely.
One thing and planned this entire thing out. And and like had all these spreadsheets and had all these graphs probably like on his wall, like fucking yeah, Charlie.
Totally. Day. And every day that's all he did. In fact, in May 2002, he was there again. He did not get picked, but he was sitting next to a younger, complete stranger named Brandon. They met in line.
Yes.
And Brandon got on the show, but Brandon knew from talking to Ted, like, holy shit, this guy knows his stuff. So yeah, Brandon would turn around and look at Ted, and Ted would mimic the numbers.
Wow.
And he helped him guess the exact prize at $1,554, like exactly on the money from the crowd, because he knew exactly what it cost.
Wow.
Just an insane person, which leads to Terry Neese, though.
To Terry Neese, yes.
Okay.
And he basically is very much a similar thing.
Totally.
He researched, he knew all these things, he knew the prizes. And he literally would memorize the values. And so as it's written,
Was he like inspired by this guy?
They didn't know each other.
Okay, no. He just kind of did the same.
In fact, no one even really knew who Ted Slauson was. This was back in the 90s. Like, the only people that knew about him were the people that ran the show.
Sure.
Because they purposely were like, do not let him. He's never going to be a contestant ever again.
Because there's also a point where I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I think if you were actually on the show, one, you couldn't be back
on
the show.
You couldn't come back on.
For a specific amount of time.
You could come watch it, but you weren't allowed to be a contestant again.
Yes, exactly. And they end up changing
the... It's like being president for 4 years.
And then you couldn't come back for a certain amount of time. They ended up changing it to be a shorter amount of time, but it's a decent amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
Then he went on, and when Drew Carey was hosting... And he had chosen the exact bid for that. They actually stopped production.
It was the Showcase Showdown. Ultimate.
They just like kind of said cut while they were filming.
They literally did.
So they stopped for 45 minutes to figure out if Neese was cheating.
Because no one had ever guessed the amount. And it was like $23,743 is what he guessed. And they knew right away, like the producer was looking at her cards going, what the fuck?
That's exact. How do you get that exact
he
number?
He guessed that exact. So they, like AJ said, they completely stopped.
Yep. They stopped to try to figure it out. And they've unenthusiastically restarted production and they started taping again. And Carey unenthusiastically continued and resumed his duties for the rest of the show.
So like...
They still didn't believe him.
The kind of bottom line is like they didn't believe him, and they were just like, well, we have nothing to prove you wrong.
Basically.
And so they just kind of restarted anyway and just like, well, we got to name you the winner, I guess.
I'm going to do my best murder podcast impersonation.
Okay.
Well, and here's where it gets really weird.
Okay.
Ted Slauson was sitting next to Terry and his wife in the crowd that day.
Terry and his wife? We heard about them earlier,
Mike. Can you believe that? God. No, Ted Slauson Ted claims that he was telling Terry the exact prize number. Terry denies and says that he was smart enough to know that on his own. And they feuded over that. And
wow.
I actually believe, having watched the documentary, Ted Slauson has nothing to gain by being like, dude, I told him I'm like the smartest guy in history of Price is Right. I told him that. But Terry seems a bit like a little weasel. Like, he doesn't come across that well. And he goes, oh, no, I guessed it because 743 is our wedding anniversary, July 43. And that's why I said that. And like, everybody's like, no, you didn't.
That's the lottery, man.
Yeah.
Nobody gets that lucky.
So that was, if you haven't seen that documentary, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's a very interesting watch.
Huh. It's called The Perfect Bid, Contestant Who Knew Too Much.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. Is that like on Netflix or anything?
It was when I saw it. It's out there somewhere. Okay. I think you can find it somewhere.
Probably Prime somewhere.
Yeah.
Last couple, Aaron Paul. Is a
actor.
Yeah. Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad. Was a contestant on the show
before
he was famous.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yep,
I seen them memes.
Yeah,
I seen them.
Didn't he win too?
He lost at the Showcase Showdown.
Oh, okay,
yeah, but he did go to the Showcase Showdown, but he lost the Showcase Showdown.
Actors.
I had to throw this one in there before I get to the last big thing. There was an unintentional gaffe winning for a woman who had legs.
I think is this Drew Carey era?
This was, yes, it was. This woman with no legs won a treadmill.
Oh, no.
Don't.
They didn't mean to do it on purpose. Stop it. It was the next thing that was up to win.
Yeah.
No. And this is what happened.
No, shut up.
Yes, this is what happened.
AJ.
I can't make this up.
You're making this up.
I wish I could.
You're being a dickhead right now, right?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, I'm not. I swear to God, I'm not.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, that's a thing that happened.
No.
They had to edit around it a little bit, like to make it not so completely
out.
Yeah. What'd they do? Just shoot her from the chest up? I don't know.
They're like, you can put it on there and kneel too.
Oh, damn it. Michael!
You're on fire.
I'm fired. Damn it. Right.
Let's see. All right. Bob Barker was actually a renowned, he's a vegetarian and a huge animal rights activist.
Of course.
Which is actually why he was a personal thing for him to have your pet spayed and neutered.
That wasn't a show thing. Yeah.
Jim Carrey carried that on as well.
And that was his own personal belief system. Last but not least, guys, we would be remiss.
Yes.
If we didn't talk about Bob Barker,
the price is wrong, bitch.
Without his wonderful appearance in Happy Gilmore.
That's amazing. So was that after he had already retired? When was Happy Gilmore?
No, this was well.
He was still in the show.
2007 show, was when he retired, and so like Happy Gilmore is probably like 90-something.
Yeah.
I gotta imagine.
Did you guys at any point just like every time you were watching it, just hope that he was going to make some sort of mention of being on the Happy Gilmore
Absolutely.
Movie?
Yeah.
I always thought he was going to make mention of it, but he never does, of course. So, fun facts about this. Bob Barker was not his first choice. It was not the first choice.
For Happy Gilmore?
For Happy Gilmore to have this role, this celebrity role.
Pay attention to this information because we will cover Happy Gilmore one of these days.
Oh, absolutely. God, yeah.
So, the first person, their first want for this, for the casting, was actually Ed McMahon, Johnny Carson's sidekick.
Okay, yeah.
And the funny thing is Sandler literally said, he was like, I was so cocky. I thought I was such big shit that I thought, oh, it's going to be good for Ed McMahon to come onto my movie and get into a fist fight. It'll be good for him. Ed McMahon declined.
Said, nope.
Yeah, he's like, nope, not doing that.
You're a piece of shit.
Nope. And they talked around and they found Bob Barker. And Bob Barker, it was going to be that he was going to lose the fight, but Bob Barker said he would only do it if he won
yes.
the fight.
Which got, I mean, like, hearing that, like, as, like, a writer or, like, a content creator. Okay, like we are, guys.
Come on.
It's got to be, like, that's the best thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's so good.
I need to lose to Bob Barker.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would rather lose to Bob Barker than beat Bob Barker
up. That's way funnier.
The price is wrong, bitch.
And that was the thing is it was written by comedic director Judd Apatow that the price is wrong, bitch.
Oh, man.
And then it was obviously stamped with Barker's renowned reply of calling Happy Gilmore a bitch when he walks away. The best part of this is that he was so eager to film this fight scene that he was going to train for the combat with his next door neighbor. Next door neighbor.
What are you talking about, man?
Chuck Norris.
What?
No. Chuck Norris was his next door neighbor that he trained every night for the fight. He helps me with my punches and my kicks. And I told him I have to win the fight.
I love Bob Barker.
Is that?
Boom.
How can, what? Hey.
He trained for a fight with Adam Sandler with Chuck Norris.
Do you
his
picture?
Next door neighbor.
Do you picture Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Like that's how I picture them living together.
Oh my God.
Totally. Totally.
Imagine your next door neighbor being the person who makes the world go around. Chuck Norris.
Chuck
Norris. Literally spins it on his shoulders every night before he goes to bed.
Imagine living next to the person when he jumps in water, he doesn't get wet. Water gets Chuck Norris.
Go on and on.
Chuck Norris doesn't just teabag the ladies. He potato sacks them. Okay? This is the man that trained.
You're disgusting.
You are terribly disgusted.
I mean, can you imagine, like, the parties that they had?
Oh, good Lord.
Chuck Norris and Bob Barker living next door. Just be like, hey, I'm having a little get-together. It's like, what kind of, like, cocktails do they drink? I'm assuming best. Just scotch.
Yeah.
Like vats of scotch.
Scotch.
Sweated from Chuck Norris.
Bob Barker was such a ladies' man, too. Like, every old lady that came on that show, like, to give him a kiss on the cheek or to hug him was, like, their lifelong dream. They loved Bob Barker.
And he acted like he didn't. He didn't care. Like, was, like, smitten by it. You know, or was like, oh, get them off the show. He's like... He liked it.
But contact with Bob Barker is like some fountain of youth theory. I swear to God, of just like,
listen, it's hard to get hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get hard.
Okay.
All right. Couple more tidbits before we get out of here. Do you know how many, games they have had on the show?
No.
Cause they recirculate them. Right. So yeah. they put a lot of work into this set and they're like, here's what the game looks like.
So it was like
in the '40s.
So it was like the showcase showdown at the end for sure.
The prizing games. And then, like those
what was the first one?
So those are like the bidding games. The bidding then they games. Call them the prizing games.
And then the silver
games.
Monkey.
And then the aggro crag.
Right.
No,
right.
They had more than 70 games.
70 games?
More than 70. And obviously Plinko being the favorite. The other one being Cliffhangers. That was the yodeler. Remember the
yodeler?
Yes. Like that's a pretty funny one.
Yep.
What?
Yeah. You don't remember that one?
You don't remember that?
What?
You have to bid, and like if you bid too much, like he keeps, however much you go over, he keeps climbing. I don't know.
And do you remember specific games other than that? Because I have one that I remembered specifically. It was the dice game.
You're not moving on. Yeah.
Okay, you don't.
Yeah. There's a yodeler?
No, it's just like a sound. It's like an audio
segment. Yeah. Like, what the fuck are you talking
about? Well, and again, these very, very popular games, they said they would only appear like once every 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
To make the anticipation.
Wow.
So
all right.
You may have never seen it.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
In fact, right now in the background, you're going to hear the noise that happens during Cliffhanger Game. Can you hear it?
I can. Wow, I can't. I don't remember that.
Nope, don't remember that. Well, yeah, Dice Game was always super cool because that was always a car.
Oh, yeah.
That was always a car.
Yes.
And you had to roll the dice. There was also a putting game, like where you actually got to mini golf putt. I did read, too, that the show keeps anywhere from 37 to 45 vehicles on the studio lot at any given time. New cars.
Brand new
cars because the inventory would rotate every week. They wouldn't give away the same car.
Sure.
Yeah. They would just, every show, there'd be a new car.
You think it'd be just like kind of a bidding war between like Ford and...
Probably.
Yeah. I would imagine.
It's kind of a racket. They go, give us some cars for free. We'll advertise for you.
Yeah.
But then they go, some poor schmuck's not going to be able to pay the taxes on this car.
Well, I mean, they had
Nancy
everything.
From Phoenix isn't going to be
sucks.
This.
They had everything. I swear to God, like, well, I was always nervous. I always thought, like, if I got on there, I would always want to do the car. But then you're like, they had such a wide variety of cars. They'd be like, yeah, we're going to do a Ferrari 438 giveaway and they're a new car.
It's
like, and then, like, the next one is like, oh, you're going to get a new car. And it's like a Chevy Cobalt, like, LS.
Like physically the shot, like, cuts in. They're like,
I know. They're like you can see, like, trying to be excited. Like, okay.
I'm on camera right now. Right.
I guess I could sell it later. That's fine.
The same equivalent of a Legends of the Hidden Temple kid. Like, moon shoes.
Oh, God.
You get to go to Orlando, Florida. And you already live there.
From Orlando.
Again.
I just kind of want to talk about, like personal, like, how you watched it. I know we kind of touched in the beginning of, like, mostly, like, a kind of a sick show, you know. Personally, though, in middle school, that we had a program where, like, they took a group of us in weirdly German class or, like, foreign language class, which I'd never learned anything from. But sprechen Sie Deutsch, I don't know. We, in that class, like, we were signed not a funeral. It was a pre-funeral home, an old person home.
Pre-funeral?
Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. What? And he was mad at us?
I know.
Hey, all right. We're having a good time.
Retirement home.
Retirement home. Girl. Thank you.
Pre-funeral home. This is bad. I think we just got canceled.
Retirement home. Oh. We would be assigned like a person. there was a group of us, and it was like they would pair us off into pairs, and we would be assigned a person to just like go and like kind of reinvigorate their lives.
Give them something to live their next 4 days.
This is getting oddly close to prostitution.
in the like lobby area, it would always, because it would be like 9:30, 10 o'clock, totally, you know, yeah, like when the show was on.
Yeah.
There would be Prices Right. And so like we would be waiting for them to like come back from getting their ass wiped. I don't know. And
what the fuck?
Come on, guys.
Come on, go along with it.
And we'd be like, watch the Price is Right, but it'd be like an hour, and we'd be like, this is sick as fuck. Like, they're about to get that fucking Ferrari. And then we go into the guy's, well, or girl's kind of dorm.
you just don't understand this concept.
I don't. At all. I was so young.
I'm crying.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What do you mean when they got back from recess, they'd go into their dorm room?
Holy shit.
So we go into their room, and one of the guys is like a huge fan of John Wayne, and like heartbreakingly, like his VHSs wouldn't work, and so he'd be like, I guess we're just going to watch Price is Right still. And we're like, great. And he gave us, I don't remember his name. I want to say it was Earl. He gave me and my partner.
Not naming them.
Gave me and my partner pocket knives. And we were like strip searched before we got out of the thing for some reason. And they took our pocket knives from him. Oh, and I just want to say, Earl, I enjoyed our time together, and I really enjoying Price is Right with you, and I hope you are in a better place right now, and I love you.
I can't believe it took that long to get this. What's the moral of that story, AJ?
That's how I watched Price is Right most of the time.
So what we've gathered is that the only time Sean has ever watched Price is Right is puking or in some old person's dorm room. After getting a pocket knife. I think
I can't believe I said
dorm. I'm not sure there's a better way to end this episode.
That's it. You know how I watched it, man.
You know I love the show.
Okay. Yep. Oh. Holy shit.
Well,
I'm so sorry, everybody. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God! Much like the yodeler on Cliffhanger, we've gone off the cliff.
We've gone over.
So we're gonna end it. That's it for today's mini bite episode. We hope you enjoyed. Make sure you tune in next week as we get back to movie reviews. Thank God, and we're gonna talk about one of the best martial arts movies of all time. Chuck, speaking of Chuck Norris,
shut your fucking mouth.
Three Ninjas. Oh, it's gonna be great, and hopefully I'll stop crying by then. So I think we're going to bid you adieu. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The pocket knives had toothpicks in them. Classic toothpicks.
We get it.
It was great. They were high end.